Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and the title of today's podcast really should be The Week Ahead in Ukraine, because my guest is joining me on the line from Kyiv, where he's been for about a week now, a little more. It's Mike Eckel, senior correspondent here at RFERL. Now, he's hosted this podcast several times, grateful for that, and this time he's a guest. Thanks very much for joining me, Mike.
Hi from Kyiv, Steve.
All right, I'm glad you're there. Now, first, I'd like to ask you about the mood there, basically, in Kyiv. The context for this, of course, is the Russian military buildup, more than 100,000 troops estimated, you know, or significantly more by some estimates, including Ukrainian intelligence estimates, I believe, upwards of some 127,000. And while Russia says it has no plans for a new invasion of Ukraine, President Vladimir Putin has spoken of potential, quote, military technical measures, unquote, should Russia be dissatisfied with the U.S. and NATO approach to proposals, and in some cases insistent demands, that Moscow is making about European security. The chief one of those proposals or demands is a call for a binding guarantee that Ukraine, as well as other countries close to Russia, will never join NATO. And the United States contends that Russia has, in fact, been planning a possible invasion and that it could come soon. Now, Mike, obviously everyone's different, but do you have a sense of the overall mood in Kyiv?
So, well, first off, it's snowy and very wintry in Kyiv, which is very nice. The Ukrainian capital is, you know, it's a calm place and life goes on here. There's no panic buying in the stores. No one's running around frantically, you know, expecting an imminent invasion of Kyiv or the entire country for that matter. That said, you know, people are wary. You know, again, Ukraine has been at war since 2014. I think that's an important thing to recall, particularly for Western listeners. The war in the Donbass has been going on since 2014. We've got, 13,200 people dead there. And so there's been this, like, low back burner war going on for 8 years. And so for a lot of Ukrainians, particularly in the cosmopolitan cities like Kyiv, you know, there's this kind of, okay, the war is still ongoing. You know, that said, government officials from President Vladimir Zelensky on down have made clear that they are wary about what Russia's intentions are. And they have also taken great pains to present the message, don't panic. Keep calm and carry on. And what's interesting is that contrasts with some of the warnings that we're hearing from the Americans, first and foremost, and from other Western officials who have really banged the drum that, you know, war is imminent, a new war is imminent. Last week on Friday, President Zelensky held a small format news conference for foreign media where he was asked repeatedly about this kind of divergence in messaging between his government and that of the Americans. And he said, again, you know, people need to not panic, first and foremost. He said he wishes that the Americans would be a little less kind of loud and alarming in their warnings. And he said, you know, he basically defended the kind of calm approach that he and his top officials are taking towards the threat. So, and it's clear why he's doing that. I've written a story about this. Lots of people have in the past week. You know, the Ukrainian economy is not on totally solid footing. The national currency, the hryvnia, has already declined, I think, by more than 8 or 9%. I haven't checked the latest currency rates. There's been a trickle of outflow of investment dollars from the country in recent weeks. So, you know, if the economy completely tanks, you know, notwithstanding a war, then he'll have serious problems on hand, serious domestic problems on his hand, in addition to the threat of a new Russian war. So, you know, what's the mood in Kiev? I would say people are trying to go on living their lives as before. But, you know, people are wary and paying attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the factors you're saying, I think, you know, is in the attitude of wariness, you know, but not necessarily, you know, but not panic is, you know, as you mentioned, the fact that there's been a war in Ukraine since 2014. You know, that's been going on. So the threat is still there. And I think Zelensky, you know, mentioned that in his press conference. So I guess the second question, I mean, you answered some of this already, but, you know, there's this widening gap that you wrote about and you spoke about between, well, it may be widening. I don't know if it's widening, but it seems pretty wide already between the way U.S. and Ukrainian officials, including the two presidents, Joe Biden and Volodymyr Zelensky, have been speaking publicly about the Russian threat. One way to describe it might be that the United States is saying a Russian invasion is or may be imminent, and Ukraine is saying, well, you know, we really don't think so, or, you know, how come you're so sure? And Mike, you interviewed U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Thursday, I believe, and on Friday you attended Zelensky's meeting with some foreign media outlets, in which, you know, he seemed to push back pretty hard against what the U.S. Has been saying, or at least the way it's being framed. What's going on? I mean, you mentioned part of this, part of the Ukrainian motivation or Zelensky's motivations, and I guess there's also, you know, perhaps a difference in the intelligence. I mean, have you been able to get a feeling from your conversations for where the two countries are coming from and why their assessments differ so much?
I've been able to get a sense of what the sort of prevailing thinking is about the divergence. You know, obviously, I'm not privy to the classified information that that the U.S. is basing its assessment on. We do know that the U.S. has excellent intelligence assets. You know, from, you know, drones to, you know, sophisticated Air Force listening planes that are regularly up in the air along the borders to the north and to the east. And the Ukrainians, the Americans have been sharing a lot of this intelligence with the Ukrainians, and so this came up during the Zelensky press conference, where again the question of this divergence of analysis came up. And Zelensky alluded to the fact that, you know, you can have like the same sort of body of intelligence and you can interpret it in different ways. And he made a passing remark that I don't think got widely reported, where he talked about, you know, there's signals intelligence. That's with the U.S. spy satellites and planes and drones up in the air listening and watching radio communications and electronic intercepts. And then there's human intelligence, you know, the old spy cloak and dagger stuff where you have agents on the ground, the SBU, the Ukrainian Secret Service, you know, trying to infiltrate separatists in the Donbass, and the FSB, of course, and the Russia's SVR trying to infiltrate Ukraine. So Zelensky basically said, you know, well, we also have our human intelligence that we rely on. And he said that he suggested that was a large part of what was leading to the divergence in analysis. Mm-hmm. Plus the fact, as you referred to, he needs to keep the don't panic message, because again, Ukrainians do not need the currency to tank. They need jobs and livelihoods, and Zelensky needs to keep a strong base of political support among constituents and voters. So, you know, that's where we stand, and that's a very plausible explanation for the divergence. There's one other theory that's also been floating around that I tend to put credence in, and that's the question about if the American intelligence is so good, and there's reason to believe it's very, very good, that the Americans might be see it wise strategy to go loud and public with this stuff as a way to basically call the Russians out and outflank them in terms of strategy by saying it's one of these I know what you know, what I know, what you know type of situations. And, you know, I've read some analysis that says, yeah, the Russians are kind of a little bit flummoxed by how well the Americans have been playing this game. So, you know, that I think, again, I put credence in that analysis as well.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I would just mention maybe another factor is the kind of the Russian information and propaganda and disinformation that's coming out. You know, it's a bit hard to get a handle on you know, maybe that's the understatement, but hard to get a handle on what Russia's plans actually are. You know, a lot of people say nobody knows them but Putin, and he may not have decided yet. But you have, coming from Russia, the kind of constant statements from officials, Lavrov, Ryabkov, and others, saying, you know, we have no intention of attacking, or, you know, war with Ukraine would be terrible. But on the other hand, you have, you know, statements like we're not, from Lavrov and Putin, essentially, we're not going to, on these NATO, these demands of NATO non-expansion and to roll back deployments to 1997 positions, essentially. You know, we have Russia saying, well, we're not going to let our interests be trodden upon. So that's kind of a, you know, that's a threat. And then also a lot of talk, you know, on Russian TV, but also from officials about, well, Ukraine, you know, maybe planning a provocation. So, you know, that kind of undermines the Russian statement of we have no intention, you know, of attacking, because presumably, like as in Georgia in 2008. There could be a pretext for an attack, whether it's created by Moscow or otherwise. So I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, this is sort of an added factor to the intelligence to the guessing game, trying to figure out what is happening and what, you know, what Russia's intentions are with this. And we still have go on, but still have the diplomacy going as well. I mean, the threat,
right.
And then the diplomacy, I think in now it's a week and a half or so, a new meeting of the Normandy format, you know, the France, Germany, Russia and Ukraine on the Donbass situation and the Minsk II peace deal. So the question, you know, that I keep asking myself is, you know, this diplomacy keeps going on and Russia seems to keep it going. But, you know, how long is that going to last? So,
and that's a good thing. I mean, you can make a plausible argument to say, as long as the diplomacy is going on, you know, at least they're talking, they're not firing guns. So, and I certainly subscribe to the notion that, what we've seen so far, again, this is serious criminology, serious reading of the tea leaves from the diplomats, from Rybkov, from Grushko's and Lavrov, of course, is that, you know, there's lots of shoe banging on the podium going on here, but the signals seem to be still that, okay, we're still willing to talk. And, you know, the Americans handed over their formal written response to the Russians the week before last, and Putin is reported reviewing those, the American response. And like you said, we have the Normandy format coming up. And then there's all the back channels going on that we don't really hear about. Mm-hmm. The casual conversations going on in Washington, in the European capitals, trying to assess the real end game for the Russians. Again, I subscribe to the notion that for the moment the diplomacy is going. The Russians seem to be content to let it go, and Hopefully that will forestall any imminent invasion.
Right, and they're content to let it go on, at least for now. And, you know, obviously they Russia could have, when they got the formal response, essentially saying, you know, some of your demands are unacceptable. I mean, obviously that had been said before and all along, but this was the formal response saying, you know, no, we're not going to give a binding pledge to keep Ukraine or others out of NATO. You know, that could have been the pretext for, you know, some kind of military, you know, an invasion or incursion. It was not. You know, maybe there'll be another one. It's obviously hard to say, but you know, as you say, the diplomacy going on. So I guess we will see what happens in weeks ahead.
And weeks ahead, two things to look out for, of course. The Olympics are coming up. Things happen during Olympics. They have in the past where Russia is concerned. Think 2008. And also, there's been a lot of ink spilled over thawing ground, the month of March. It's a lot harder to take your battalion tactical groups and maneuver them with heavy weaponry over muddy fields of northern Ukraine, which happens, you know, in usually happens around March. So those are two things to watch out for in the coming weeks, the Olympics and the weather forecast.
Right. And then I think there's also absolutely, and there's talk in terms of the Olympics of, well, you know, yes, in the past that's happened, but is would Xi Jinping, you know, frown upon it? So that's other factors. And I think another one is this this meeting. I think it's February 9th of the Normandy format. So that could provide a hint as to, you know, is Russia going to really start pressing now on that, on the Donbass issue, trying to get the Minsk II agreements implemented in the way that it sees them or it frames them. And if that is not happening or doesn't look like it's happening, is that another factor in whether there's going to be a military action? So yes, absolutely,
right.
good to point out those things upcoming in the next few weeks. All right, we're running out of time, and we'll wrap it up there. Mike, thanks very much for joining me from Kyiv.
You bet. Anytime, Steve.
Okay, I'll be back next Monday for another Week Ahead podcast, and please check out my Week in Russia newsletter on Friday. Thanks for listening.